and welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. My name is Sarah Harmon. It is my pleasure to be hosting you for what is our 13th episode. Hard to believe it. Time has really flown by. Next month, we'll all hopefully be together in Munich. I'll be at the main stage, so come by and say hi. I'm really excited about this last episode. We have a very special guest to discuss an important piece of the mobility puzzle. Please welcome our guest today, Markus Papke. He's the Chief Innovation Officer at Riza and Müller. Markus, it's great to have you today talking about bicycles. The floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, and please do really be here for this last episode before the IAA in Munich starts. So I'm happy to give a first introduction talk about how e-bikes are shaping the future of mobility. What is in it for the future. So let me start with taking you on the journey. Let me take you to August 2030 and let's talk about the life of Peter. Peter is an urban resident and he starts his day by unlocking his e-bike just with a simple gesture. He rides through green boulevards, once car-filled streets, and now transformed into vibrant bike corridors. And his e-bike automatically shifts gears as AI tailors to terrain. It alerts him of upcoming traffic and adapts light. Smart sensors of his bikes communicate with the autonomous cars behind him. On his way to work, his app signals him that a friend is riding a nearby route and they can meet up for the last kilometers of their commute. He arrives at work without stress, without sweat, and without emissions and locks his bike just at the company's bike garage. His battery begins trickle charging for later. And a quick tap to the company app marks his arrival and he just logs 4.2 kilometers of zero emission commuting. After work, Peter, he needs some groceries. So he taps his mobility app again, reserves a shared cargo e-bike just around the corner. He parks the cargo bike after his shopping at the solar powered charging hub beside his apartment block. While he charges, he zips inside to unpack. And outside, the hub displays real-time availability for all nearby micromobility options, e-scooters, shared cars, and of course, e-bikes. This is like a world could look like, which is clean, connected through the smart shift. So let me guide you through like three important aspects of how we see e-bikes at the center of urban mobility. First, urban mobility is, as we see, really rewritten. Cities worldwide are really rethinking how people move, and e-bikes are leading the shift. Why? Because they are emission-free, space-efficient, flexible, particularly for short and medium distances. And recent studies show that this transformation is really supported. We have a bike study, for instance, which shows that nearly 80% of new bike sales in Europe are now electric. And also the Deloitte Future of Cycling study highlights that e-bikes are changing how people commute, offering faster and healthier travel while avoiding congestion. So this isn't just a trend, it's really a structural change in urban mobility. And talking about urban mobility, we can secondly look into the cities that lead the way. We can look at some real examples of cities that make bold moves for e-biking. Paris, for instance, has added over 1,000 kilometers of bike lanes. It has introduced dedicated e-bike highways and banned cars from many inner city districts. The result, 166% increase in daily cycling just within a few years. Well known for cycling is Copenhagen. They have invested in high quality cycling highways, which resulted in more than 60% of commutes by bike. So there it's not a hobby, it's infrastructure. Barcelona implemented the super blocks, car-free zones, giving priority to bikes and pedestrians. And the results, air pollution dropped, public space grew, and local business thrived. Also, some very recent examples I found today is like Cologne, for instance. In the first half of this year, they recorded 10.4 million bike rides. And this was really fueled and growing through bike trainings, more parking facilities, and more bike streets. Also interestingly, it was found by an analysis of Google mobility data that every additional kilometer of one bike lane generates over 13,000 extra cycling kilometers per year. And if you look closer to the city and also the concept of the 5-minute city, we see that really one of the strongest factors for e-biking is also the population density. The denser the city, the more trips are made by bike, because also destinations are closer. And expanding e-bike infrastructure also benefits pedestrians, because these projects often include safer sidewalks and more intersections. And we can also, for instance, see that in cities like Amsterdam or Copenhagen, half of all trips are already made actively. And talking about the effect, if all cities would have reached such a level, the greenhouse gas emissions could be cut dramatically. And some even estimate that the annual healthcare costs could fall by more than 380 billion a year. So what do those cities have in common? They've redesigned space to make biking the most attractive option. Thirdly, what we see is that e-bike ownership is really a lifestyle shift. And it's something we also see among friends and family. If you choose an e-bike, it's not a practical decision. It's emotional, it's transformative. It changes how you move, how you see your city, and how you engage with the environment. We also see in studies that e-bike riders ride more often and further. They replace car trips, and they feel more active, connected, and more in control. So owning an e-bike really means that it's more than just replacing a car trip. It reshapes your daily habits and your mindset. If we look a little bit closer into some recent studies, for instance, we saw it was found that if someone bought and acquired an e-bike, their average weekly cycling frequency has risen by 35% and a trip distance by 22% compared to traditional bike owners. And it was also interesting to see that people which were only riding maybe on the weekend, they were now also using their bike all time during the week. It was also in another study found that if you want to sort of replace your car, that people who owned an e-bike, they replaced 40% of their former car journeys with an e-bike within 3 months of the e-bike social bike ownership. If you also look at the more like social and psychological impact, interestingly, we can see something which we sort of might name a cascade effect. So if somebody is owning an e-bike, friends and family see the ease, the joy of electric cycling, and are also more likely to adopt one themselves. And this network effect really accelerates community-wide behavior change. And lastly, this shift isn't just about transportation. It really is about how we live. And looking ahead and also giving us some playground for the questions to come, what is coming next? How is the world really looking like in 2013? Overall, the market for e-bikes and bicycle market is growing. It is estimated that by 2028, it will already reach a value of 29 billion, driven largely by e-bike. But it's not just the scale, as we see. It's also technology, such as tech innovation, automatic transmissions, AI-based predictive maintenance, or smart safety features, such as collision alerts or real-time traffic updates. And talking about cities, looking ahead, it's also infrastructure evolution, dedicated e-bike highways, charging hubs, and a full integration of the e-bike into public transport and mobility as a service. And there lies also a lot of potential. It is said that if cities would implement a digital twin, they could save or unlock a saving of up to 10 billion in urban planning efficiencies and savings just by using the live GPS data and the sensor data and the micromobility data, which is available. Lastly, health and sustainability. Biking means lower emission, less noise, cleaner air, more physical activity, also sort of providing more health to the rider. Spaces that are reclaimed for people and not for cars. So by 2013, we see that the e-bike will be more than a mobility tool. It will be an essential piece of sustainable city life. In closing, what are the final thoughts? What can we take away from this smart shift that is happening? Peter's right, as we heard in the beginning of 2013, is in our opinion, in my opinion, not science fiction. It's really a future within reach. The technology is here, the public is ready, and the benefits are proven. So the smart shift isn't just a dream, it's really a responsibility and the future to rethink space, to redefine mobility, and to create cities that are healthy, clean, and human. So let's shape the mobility of the future together. And e-bikes are a central part of this Smart Shift. Thank you very much. And I'm now looking forward to your questions.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your vision of Peter's Bride with us. Really intriguing. Marcus, I have a question to kick things off. You know, you painted a really beautiful vision of Peter's ride through the city. And I think, you know, in a lot of places, we're not quite there yet. In your opinion, what policy or infrastructure changes are most urgently needed from cities or government to unlock the full potential of e-bikes and make Peter's future ride reality?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things, to put it very simply, is to make space for the bike on the streets. I think one solution which is very common is really this concept of the protected bike lane. And another one is really like offering secure parking. I think many people, maybe they don't take their e-bike because they're afraid it gets stolen at a bus station or at a train station. So I think it's really this political move to say, okay, let's say if we have a 2 or 3 lane street, it's not like 3 lanes for the car. It's like maybe 1 lane for the car and maybe 1 for public transport and 1 is a protected bike lane for the bikes. Because I think that's one of the, let's say, main hurdles, that there is not maybe enough infrastructure, or the infrastructure which is there is maybe not, doesn't feel safe enough, because people, they need to feel safe if they ride a bike, and it needs to be sort of like a coexistence of all these modalities and all these mobility solutions, which needs to take place. And it also means I mentioned some cities, all these cities really made bold moves that also did not maybe like make everyone happy. But I think it's very important to make these bold moves and really implement this change.
I'm curious how evolving customer needs and rider expectations are shaping the product innovation at Riza and Müller. What consumer trends are driving your current development?
Yeah, I think what we see is that for many, like the e-bike is still very new. So the e-bike itself is not so old. It has sort of really gotten traction in 29, and we see that really people are, let's say, flocking to the e-bike because they really have a need to either replace their car, transport kids. So we see that really people coming to your question, they have a need. Let's say I want to take my 2 kids to the kindergarten, and I want to do it in an environmental friendly and really quick way, and that's how they are looking at a product. And what we see is like, one trend is like that people are really looking for durability, and also like that it's ease of use, that it really has enough range, enough power. So I think that's really are the drivers for some of the people. And also we see that really the sustainability aspect of the product itself is becoming really important for the buyer. So they want to know where the parts are coming from. As for instance, Riza Müller, we're using recycled aluminium. We have really reshored some of our manufacturers, and that parts are coming really from Europe. I think that's very, very important. And I think that many are using the bike, particularly if you look at Riza Müller, not as a sporting device or something. It's really a tool for everyday mobility, which can really easily replace a car in many aspects.
The phrase, the smart shift, refers to a technological change. What technological innovations do you think are going to revolutionize e-bikes in the coming years?
It's a good question, and I might ask if it really needs a revolution. I think, as I said before, I think that the e-bike still sort of is matching many needs. I think what we will see in the future is something more like gearboxes, integrated sort of AI into the bikes. We will also see more advanced, probably, safety systems, such as mentioned collision warning, adaptive lighting, maybe also communication with other V2X parties on the streets. And I think also some battery technology will be evolving, going more in the direction of maybe solid state batteries, and recycling ecosystems will be also very important. So, but I think for many, the sort of bike needs to just fulfill many, many needs, and I think technology is just sort of like the enabler. It's not like somebody will hop on an e-bike because it has that technology, but I think the technology is like really, really helpful, that you feel either safer or on your ride, That you feel protected. It's like, for example, with Miller, we have our GPS tracking system called RX Connect, and it's just really solving this pain point that people are afraid that their high-value e-bike gets stolen. And with the GPS tracking, they always know where their bike is. They get an alert if the bike is moved. And if their bike is stolen, they get help and get replacement and get recovery of this bike. So I think it's very oftentimes not about so much pushing technological innovation. It's more like, what is really the pain point of the users and what is really their behavior and how can we sort of answer that with a good technical solution.
Earlier in the discussion, you brought up AI. Walk us through, what are some of the more promising use cases for AI in the evolution of e-bike technology? And I'm thinking here about rider experience. What is AI going to do for me on the e-bike?
I think the one thing which you can really grasp very quickly is the topic of predictive maintenance. So basically that the bikes is telling you when it needs to go to the workshop or which bike part might break for the next time. I think like a general topic is also where if you talk about technological innovation, that the bike parts themselves, they already last long, but that they even last longer. So if you compare like how often you need to go to workshop for a bike compared maybe to a car, it's just much more often after a few kilometers. So one topic AI can really fuel is really predictive maintenance. So that really you are, before something really goes wrong or something is breaking, the bike already predicts that. Another one could be also in terms of traffic routing or like if you sort of are navigating. So AI could really help sort of to condense and combine like streams of riders so that whatever they all flow together and the traffic light turns green when they're coming across. And it can also be more like in a sporty region, personalized ride coaching that, for instance, AI suggesting how you ride and how your effort level should be, and maybe implementing also some user fitness data. And also interestingly, as I also said, I think AI could also view like how we can use all this data which we have to really support mobility and urban planners. How really sort of that they can do some analysis and maybe also some projections, how like bike riders can flow through a city much more easily and where really are some pain points and spots they need to improve.
That makes sense. Marcus, I wonder if you could share with us if there are any lessons that Riza and Müller have learned, perhaps from the automotive or tech sectors when it comes to smart mobility and connected devices.
I think what we see oftentimes is like that we can, if we look at the automotive industry, that's also why it's so interesting for us to come to ERR, is like really looking how they are basically doing things and really, for instance, also what they're doing in a good way in terms of maybe how they integrate the user in a terms of digital way that you can interact. And that's something we, for instance, learned, that you really want and can interact with your bike very, very digitally, so that you have an app where you can sort of steer and change everything on your bike, for instance. That's one of the important topics. And the other topic we had before, and it's the same, is like really also so in automotive, some of the drivers is really something like the predictive maintenance topic I mentioned. And the third one is really something where we need to work together, where we need to collaborate, is the topic of vehicle-to-vehicle communication or vehicle-to-X communication. So that basically it means that an autonomous car or a car which is partly driving autonomously can also sort of react to a bike, and also the bike rider itself gets sort of a reaction and a feedback in that regard. And that is something we are currently also exploring and working on.
Walk us through how engineering excellence and sustainability can complement each other, and maybe share where some of the bigger challenges lie. How are you approaching that?
I think the question is it really a challenge, or how can we do things differently? I think taking a step back, what was very important for Riza Müller is like when like a couple of years ago our CEO stepped out and said, okay, we have this bold vision. We want to be the most sustainable e-bike company at all. Yeah. And that really sort of led to a certain really traction and to many projects, which you can also read up about in our sustainability report. And one example sort of answering also your question is like, in some cases, it doesn't, for instance, change so much the engineering part, but maybe some of it. So we invested a lot of time with our partners who are building our frames, which are always aluminium frames, that we can integrate more and more recycled aluminium. So that doesn't really change, like, let's say, the aspect how a bike is designed and how it's looking, but it basically changes the ingredients. Another thing is that we're working closely about these, let's say, topics of these Rs, repairability, recycling. So this is really something we now integrated in engineering and design from the very beginning, that we are thinking about how can this product be repaired? How can this product be recycled? How can it be reused in a certain way? How can we make a circular sort of concept out of that? So, yeah, basically, I think it changes the requirements in design and engineering in the beginning, just to have a look at more topics and to think about the product in the entire life cycle. So before use, during use, and also after use. I think this is how it has basically changed. Yes.
What about in your own role as Chief Innovation Officer? How do you prioritize between breakthrough innovation and incremental improvement?
I think the main sort of area lies within like more like incremental innovation, and not so much like outside in some moonshot topics. And I think maybe I can also make a few examples of like innovation projects which we have done. For instance, one is like our bike subscription, our bike abo. And it was basically built on the fact that we have seen that people are really keen to, let's say, subscribe a bike rather than owning it. We also see that, for instance, leasing and financing are very sort of common and very popular, because our e-bikes at starting prices of 4,000 euro or more, I mean, it's quite a purchase for some. And with our bike subscription, we created a business model which really reacted to like this, yeah, attraction of consumers that wanted to ride a bike, but just wanted to, yeah, do it on a monthly, pay it on a monthly basis. So that's one example. Another example of more like an innovation project has been the implementation of our own business unit, because we've seen that there's a huge demand from fleet operators and also companies that want tailored solutions for their own fleet. So that really means that many of the topics are more like really centered around business models and redefining our products, rather than sort of really moonshot topics, which we surely are always looking at, being at the autonomous bike or the full autonomous cargo bike. But oftentimes we come back to really the points that really make a difference out there in the market, being at business models or being at, as we said, the topic of connectivity, which could be a good last example, where we build our own infrastructure, our own digital cloud, which is sort of collecting all the data of the consumers and riders who have consented, giving the data anonymously and helping us to really redefine how products can look in the future, and also creating use cases for the customer, being it they see where they have traveled, how long they have traveled, how much CO2 they've saved, or when they maybe need to go to the next service.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier. You talked a little bit about the circular economy and circular economy principles. I'm curious how you think the product lifecycle of an e-bike might evolve in a more sustainable future. Where do you see the potential?
And there are different things which we also take from this aspect of repairability and recycling. I think one topic is clearly the modular design. So the more modular the bike is, the better you can also replace parts. The same also applies, for instance, to batteries. There's now this new regulation coming up with the German Batterieverordnung, that you really also need to replace the single cells of a battery, so that it already shows the direction of more modularity, more repairability, and also maybe the possibility, as we already have it currently with batteries, to recycle and take back certain parts, to reclaim the materials after the end of their life. But overall, I think our goal also at Riese Müller is to have a very reliable and long-term bike, which through repairs and maintenance, you can use for a very, very long time. I think that's like how it's reflected. Other circular economy principles, like for instance in our bike subscription, could also be that main what we see now is a huge effect triggered by financing and leasing, that we see a growing second-hand market of bikes with a second life. And I think that's something where also circular economy principles will kick in, because after a leasing period of 3 years, those bikes can either be kept by the employee or they can be given back. And we now see, I think there's estimations of hundreds of thousands of second-hand e-bikes, which then are refurbished. So I think the refurbishment topic is very important, added an additional guarantee, and then also sold into market. So I think this topic of giving the bike a second life and also maybe a third life, that is becoming increasingly important. I also starts with really like the quality from the first day onwards. So what we also heard at some conferences and studies now is that really also the leasing companies and are more and more looking on what is really the value of this bike after 3 years, because some of the bikes maybe they are maybe more degrading in sort of durability or also how well they are after 3 years. And I think these are some topics around circular logistics and circular economy principles which we are currently applying. The same also for materials. We use many recycled materials, for instance, in our textiles and accessories, so that we really always are trying to create this circular aspect.
I'm conscious that we're coming to the end of our time today and we need to let you get back to innovating. So perhaps as a final question, I'm going to ask you to look ahead, as you did at the start of your talk when you were giving us this vision of Peter's journey. Look ahead for us 5 to 10 years and share with us, if you would, what you would consider a breakthrough moment, a true game changer for the e-bike industry globally.
And it's a very good question to end with. I think it's a combination of really, really great products, both pedelecs and also S-pedelecs, which I didn't mention too much now, really going up to 45 kilometers, really also extending like larger distances. So it's really about very durable, very safe, and very innovative, great products that really are helping people sort of to make the right choice for mobility if they commute. And the second one is really like infrastructure, to get away from this, let's say, infrastructure mismatch, to really have dedicated e-bike highways that can really carry thousands of bike riders also at maybe higher speeds. And the third one is really like, I think this multimodal approach, which you have, yeah, that it's not a struggle if you take your bike into a train or into a tram, and that you really have this multimodal approach. So I think if we consider these three topics, I think that in total, also underlying with really governmental and political support, that can really be a breakthrough. And I think we see positive signals, either the European Union, which wants to increase cycling kilometers, being at the cities and being at also the products, which will also be seen at ERR. I think if this all comes together and be sort of fulfilling the projections the studies show and the growth trajectory we have, I think then we will have like this really global e-bike industry game changer in the future.
Yeah. Well, listen, since you mentioned it, if folks are coming to IAA and they're interested in learning more about these bikes, where can they find them?
They can find, among others, from Riese Müller. We have a big booth at Odeonsplatz, where you can have a look at all of our bikes, being it long tail bikes for family and using like a lot of cargo, long jump bikes, on also S pedelecs and our latest innovations, which we just presented. And if they want to test ride it, we also have a test booth at Ludwigstraße, where you can take one of our bikes for a spin and for a ride and test it out. And we're looking very much forward to be part of IA Mobility Open Space.
All right. Well, I'm going to try and sneak down and get a test ride in if I can get away from the main stage. Markus Popka, the Chief Innovation Officer at Riese & Müller, thank you for being our guest on our final episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. It's been a pleasure having you today, and I hope to see you all in Munich in September. Take care.